That's a great question.
Here I am as Miss Kentucky, competed in Miss America, and it's been really an amazing journey.
So in Lexington in particular, we mostly resettle Congolese, and we have the largest population of Congolese within Kentucky.
And he said to me, science is cool, learning is fun. That's what we do.
All the schools in Kentucky present a power word presentation, which talks about verbal bullying, negative perceptions in hip-hop, how to challenge our peers when they use negative words. Words. At the end of the day, words do matter, and it's a catalyst for action.
That's a great question. That's a powerful question. That's a question that I hope that all of us will continue to ponder on.
We'll be getting back out to playing live, but some places that I do like playing here in Lexington.
I tend to focus on local issues, local people, you know, local being Kentucky.
So we've got these various battles raging between the Attorney General and the governor, and in the background is the former governor.
This is a myth that is really common.
Mountain Dew is not a contraceptive.
Probably is going to cause a pretty bad yeast infection.
An extreme yeast infection.
If you can't deep fry it, spray paint in gold.
Now, will the animal send you like a postcard as a thank you with a little paw print on it?
Who's at fault more, men or women?
The vetting process. Did you already ask that? Okay.
It works.
If it's Friday and you've spent the whole week muttering fire stoops under your with your coworkers, then you're listening to Bluegrass Bios on WLXU LPFM Lexington Community Radio. We have some big show news for you that will break at some point. But until then, I am Kyle Bigelow. In studio, like clockwork, is Benjaneer Wolf.
Hey, Kyle.
And unless he'll be removing someone's foot or otherwise documenting a zoo tragedy, Dr. Alex Estrada will be joining us in the 1 o'clock hour. We'll see about that.
All right, cool.
If you have no idea what I just said there, you can listen to all of our previous shows from LexingtonCommunityRadio.org under the podcast tab, or simply tweet angrily at us at BluegrassBios. We have a lot of great guests today, but for my money, there is none greater than our first guest already in studio with us, hip-hop artist, community activist, and friend of the show, Divine Karama, ladies and gentlemen.
Peace, peace. Good afternoon, Lexington. What's popping?
How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm blessed. How you doing?
Not bad.
Saw you roaming around the streets a few weeks ago, man.
That's right. We were both outside of that, what do you call that place? The Centro? Is that where we saw each other?
I think so, man.
Yeah. Well, going out and seeing the people. There's a lot of, there were a lot of young ladies out that night, as
there
I recall,
were.
Too.
Trying to get me in trouble, see?
I took them all for myself. As I said, I know that you're a Cats fan, Divine. You're an athlete. I know that you're following this football team. So just to start off on an easy note, what'd you think after that Southern Miss game on Saturday? Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be honest with you. I thought two things. I'm a diehard UK fan, so understand that. Marty Moore, Pookie Jones.
Yeah.
Like, that's how far I go back.
Higgs and Logan.
Like, I mean, come on, man.
Kirsten.
Like, yes.
Pirelli.
Okay, stop. I ain't that old, man. Well, yeah,
I'm not that old.
Hold on.
I'm not that old either. Yeah. I'm not that old either.
But I do remember. Come on.
Is that
I do remember.
But the Bear Bryant team.
All the way up to Anthony White and Tim Couch. And you know what I'm saying?
Craig Yeast.
Come on, man. So.
Artus.
I have to say this. Stop, man.
I'm bringing back memories. That's what.
Derek and Dennis Johnson. Okay. Oh. So. My first thought was, here we go again.
Yeah.
And I know that's cliche. Like, okay, you know, here we go again. But part of me, when we were up by 20-some points, and I wanted to turn the game off so I could write, work on the album, something told me that we were going to blow this lead. Like,
Are you native Lexingtonian?
I am.
Yeah, me too. So... I was watching it with 10 other people. Mm-hmm. Nobody even considered saying the game is over because we've watched this way too many times.
We understand.
We know it can happen.
You guys are snake bit.
Oh, huh? I mean,
you just feel unlucky.
I mean, you know, like people talk about the LSU Hail Mary and but it's not
Do
even
you know that.
What
one,
I'm
Kyle?
Talking
I'll
about,
tell you about that one.
Yeah, we'll have to tell you about that one. But what I'm talking about is the last 5 to 7 years when we routinely give up 15, 20, 30 point leads, lose ball games, two teams we should beat, mind you. Yeah. It's not like we're losing a 20 point lead to Florida.
Which has happened several times.
Which has happened, of course. Yeah, but we almost expected that even then because it's, you know. Yeah. But I mean.
Well, you knew that 70 yard play with 20 seconds left in the half. You could just see it.
Why you schedule a Southern Miss is it's a scheduled win. You know, like you give them a pile of money just to show up so you can start your season on a high note. And then not only do you lose, but, I mean, the wheels fell off in the second half.
Well, I mean, and I'm not a judgmental person. Like, I'm not a person, he's done. He got to go.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, his players are here.
He has an 8-figure buyout in his contract.
Oh, wow.
We are stuck with this guy. There's no way. We can't fire him. That was part of his extension.
See,
smart
guy.
Yeah,
or not? Because
on the part of our athletic department.
Well, and two with him, I mean, he's going to get another job because people would chalk it up as well. That's
Kentucky.
But it's not because I felt like we were starting to get over that hump.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Me too.
We were really starting to get there, and just to see us go back. After this guy was supposed to bring his top-notch talent, and once his guys get in, and he gets his system, and great, you know.
And we've got a nice track record going, especially with Randall Cobb and Danny Trevathan doing so well in the NFL. And you can be you can play in the SEC and get into Kentucky.
Yeah,
I don't think anybody anymore thinks of Kentucky as an endpoint. It's a stepping stone on the way to something else. It's something you can. You make some money doing while you're in between other things. We need somebody who maybe is a native Kentuckian who wants to coach Kentucky, and this is it for him.
But you know what? It's not just a stepping stone for coaches, but I think the players. Because I think players feel like, okay, I might not be able to get playing time going here, but Kentucky is in the SEC.
Yeah.
So pro scouts will be like, hey, he competed against the best.
Yeah.
So at least I can still get playing time and get a good look. Mm-hmm. We need to make it a final destination for the players, too. When they come to Kentucky, we want them to be like, okay, we can come to Kentucky and win, not get a look. You know what I mean? Like,
If I can pull you guys away from the edge of the cliff for a second.
Sure, please.
They did look very good in the first half. Three interceptions.
Fine.
One of them, like Odell Beckham back there.
The other
Barker
guy,
looked good.
He had to make it with one hand because the guy had his left hand wrapped,
sure,
his right arm wrapped up.
It was great. Is it possible? Do you have any sort of hopes in the swamp tomorrow afternoon?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah?
If Florida looks past us, and, you know, you look, oh, it's Kentucky.
Yeah.
You know, they can't beat us. They're here. They're on our home turf.
Well,
they haven't won in, what are we up to, 28 years?
It's something like that.
I remember.
So anybody can have a bad day and overlook us. And you see, the SEC, thankfully, distracted everybody from us for the whole weekend, because the SEC had a rough weekend.
Had a rough
just
weekend.
In general.
Yeah.
Ole Miss blew a big lead. Tennessee almost got beat to Appalachian State. I don't know what it is about Appalachian State, but they seem to play their best games against Division I teams.
Yeah.
And then, who was it, Mississippi State lost to? South Alabama? Or
yep.
Yeah. And
well,
who else?
The tide
LSU.
Rolled on.
LSU
lost to Houston. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, it was a rough week for the whole conference. So that kind of took attention away from us.
I think it's do or die for this season against Florida. I think that they have a chance to show that okay, this was a fluke. We didn't take them serious.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little different than years before. This is just we dropped the ball in the second half. This is who we really are.
Yeah.
Or they'll do what they did last year when they
just fall
the pants, right? the next big game, they're revealed, and so it'll be either or, man. I'll watch it and see, but
I don't want to get mired too far down into any one topic because we've got so much that we want to talk to Divine about. The last time we had you in was right before the We Move demonstration outside of the courthouse, or outside of the courthouse, right?
Yeah.
Put on by Rosalyn Elise and Diamond Roberts. Can you tell us how that turned out in your eyes?
It turned out great. I think that the numbers on Facebook were around 1,000. So I think we ended up getting about 350, 400 people to come out, which was the biggest march or protest of any kind since Trayvon Martin, which is when a lot of these black was when the Black Lives Matter movement kind of materialized
in Lexington or
and no in Lexington
okay
yeah, yeah. in Lexington yeah. So you had, because a lot of people try to tap into that immediate emotion and do rallies and marches the day after a tragedy happens. But what the girls decided to do was take their time, let some of that emotion calm down, so you would have level heads at the protest, so it would be peaceful. So I think that because they waited, they lost a lot of those people who kind of, you know, live in the emotion.
Right.
So it probably could have been more people. But in waiting, they lost a lot of people, but still had the biggest rally. And I think the people there were people that were really invested in finding solutions.
Right.
So it was great. You had all different type of races, gender. You had churches. You had Muslims. You had young, old, students, locals, all coming together 100% positive. And even the police, because understand that Roz and Diamond didn't have a permit. And also didn't have a permit to march in the street, which means that the police could shut them down.
Yeah.
But what, and shouts out to Commander Maynard. Him and his officers came out. They saw what we were doing, understanding what we were doing, even if some of the sentiment was not anti-police, but anti-racist police, which could be translated as anti-police. They let them rock. They cleared the streets out. They let them march. They, you know, they let them exercise their rights. And you know, so, I mean, it was peaceful all the way around. I thought it was great, man.
Was that sort of powerful, the understanding of Roz and Diamond realizing that that they'd gotten that leeway from maybe an institution that they're there against?
I think so. I not to the extent that I wish they would have. But I think they did kind of take a moment of pause, like, okay, like, just like we don't want to be put in a box, we can't put all of authority or all of the system in a box. So I think it was eye-opening from that standpoint. And I think it was eye-opening for the police as well, because this was led by young people. A lot of people think because they came through my Believing in Forever umbrella that I had a hand in this, and honestly, I didn't. I mean, I gave them advice here and there as any mentor would, but these are 16-year-old girls that spoke, led the chants, led the march, and organized this entire thing. So I think it showed the system and the local authorities in Lexington that, hey, not all young people, young minorities, are out here to cause trouble. They can actually bring people together, too. So it was a beautiful experience, in my opinion.
What do you see for the, as you said, they're 16, they're high school students at Dunbar. Do you expect them to do more things like this in Lexington, or do you expect the success of the We Move March to cause more Black Lives Matter demonstrations around here?
Honestly, I don't know. I want them to remain active, but I think where they're both so young and in school, I think they put so much of their efforts towards this, and I think they realize how difficult and stressful it is to be active in the community. Not saying that that's deterring future efforts, But I think they're just trying to focus on school right now. You know what I mean? And but I do think that they got some, which is understandable.
Yeah.
But I do think that in the future, I think they want to get more involved. And both of them went to a leadership camp too prior to the march. So they learned a lot. And that was not a camp that they had to go to, but they want to learn how to be better leaders. So I do think it's something in the future that both of them are taking more serious. But again, what I like about them is they don't do things just to do them. Mm-hmm. Because they could have, off the heels of the energy from the march, just did a bunch of little protesting. But if it didn't mean anything, if they weren't really invested, mm-hmm. then they're not going to do it. Which I think is smart. So, but that's funny because I'm probably gonna text them today. Like, all right, what's next? Like, yeah, you know, the fight's not over.
You stay said leadership camp.
Yeah.
Who teaches that? Where do they teach it?
I wish I could tell you. I think it's an organization here in Lexington.
Okay.
But I think they went like to some type of little camping resort.
Okay.
Where they did team building and skill building, yeah, and yeah, so they deal. Went for like a weekend. Yeah.
Okay. And did they get good support from their peers, from people their own age, their classmates and things?
Yes.
Because I know that can be, you know, getting 16-year-olds,
it can
getting
be tough.
Adults together on stuff.
It can but be tough. But teenagers. I think what they did, which is what I champion. Because this generation is about what's trendy. Like back in our day, was what's cool.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Fonzie with the jacket. You know what I'm saying?
Sometimes now, I was anti-trendy.
Right.
So whatever people aren't doing is cool.
And it can be, and that can sometimes be the wave. Mm. So I think what they did was they made the march wavy. So they made it cool. Oh, so goodness. Even if a lot of their peers were coming just because it was the place to be, mm-hmm. they were there. And then once they got there, maybe they were enlightened. But they were probably just coming because, yo, I heard everybody's going to the march. You got to go.
Well, it can be a lot easier on the girls if the, you know, they have support and a backbone and, you know, they.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you know people are going to show up and people are going to be supportive, it makes, you know, it lifts the load off your back quite a bit. So that's
definitely.
Good. That was very good to hear.
Yeah.
Director of Believing in Forever, Divine Karama, in studio with us. Before we get to the music, your passion, your upcoming full-length album, and, I don't know, the opening for Talib Kweli at the Lyric next week. I want to combine the football conversation and the Black Lives Matter conversation, and I'm sure that you know where this is going right now.
Oh, yeah.
Some of your thoughts on all this stuff around Colin Kaepernick, you know, what his protest and some of the responses you've heard around it.
Well, first, let me give you a shout out for that dope segue. Like, you really do this, huh? Like, this you're not playing around, are you?
That's right.
I didn't see that one coming. That was dope. Okay, so the way I feel about it, I feel strongly about it. Let me say this first. I'm going to stand mm-hmm. for the national anthem. That's just me. And I have a lot of issues with the system and inequality. But I'm going to stand for the national. That's just me. So I don't agree with what he's doing per se. Mm-hmm. But I 110% agree that he has the right to peacefully protest how he sees fit. And I think the thing that angers me is that where is this anger and this vitriol when there is a unarmed black man that gets choked to death or shot dead? Mm. It's selective anger. Like when that
I've
gorilla
said
got
that
shot.
Phrase many times
yeah, I mean,
myself.
When that gorilla got shot,
Harambe.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, there was outrage. But yeah. then an unarmed black human being gets shot.
Mm-hmm.
Where's your outrage?
Mm-hmm.
It's funny when people only bring up black on black violence when it's to minimize the awareness of racial injustice in the system. Mm-hmm. But how come you don't talk? So in other words, when you say, man, that's a shame what happened to Eric Garner. Illegal mm-hmm. chokehold, mm-hmm. selling cigarettes, they choke him to death.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, yeah, Divine, you talking about that. But what about all the blacks killing each other in Chicago? But my thing is, how come you don't champion that cause? How come you don't give anything back to Chicago? How come you don't even mention that the other 364 days of the year? Mm. You're using it as a punchline. So again, it's that subtle undertone of racism that still exists that drives me crazy. Because a lot of people don't see it, but I do, and it drives me nuts. Me and my mom, we always talk about Bill O'Reilly. He's the Gandalf, y'all. Lord of the Rings. He's the Gandalf of subtle racism.
Because
he understands who's listening and watching the show. He knows exactly the tone to use, exactly how to use his words to suggest something without actually saying it. And a lot of people don't realize it. But I do, and it's just upsetting to see people going after this guy the way that they are. And two, I think it's taking the energy and the focus off what he's protesting.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating, too. But
that's the thing, man. It seems like everyone has used this, at least in the media, you know, which has a voice that that resonates with a lot of people. But it's just become what everybody wants the conversation to be about. Like, I don't know when this turned into an anti-military thing.
I'm
you're talking to somebody who who's currently serving till February.
Right.
And you and I have talked to other servicemen and women, and they're confused about where all this came from.
Which many have come out to support him.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot that have come out to support that, saying, hey, this is the right that we fought for.
And this
I'm with you.
And this is kind of what we talked about at the end of the show last week, is the national anthem is kind of a catch-all. It doesn't represent one thing, or the military. You don't like something the president does or Congress does, in this case the local police department. You can sit for the national anthem in protest of that. But I think to speak to, you know, the subtle racism and the vitriol and the denial, the flat denial that there's a problem, it's people settle into their lives, and they often settle into a comfortable life. And this is my life, and this is how it is, and I have an idea of America, and this is what America is.
Right.
And America is a just place. And
talking about white people here, right?
For the most part, yes. And if the cops shot and killed somebody, that means they deserved it, because that's my idea of the police force and of America. Now, when something comes along and shakes that up, it takes the ground out from underneath them. And denial is the first stage in those five stages of grief and bereavement towards acceptance. Right. So we're still in stage one, believe it or not, getting past the denial that there's a problem.
I don't think that it takes more than kind of a fundamental understanding of American history to sort of, if you are, I think the sort of person you're talking about stopped learning American history after they left the 12th grade. You know, kind of, I don't know.
There's a lot of ridiculous stuff in American history that's not in our textbooks.
And I got a metaphor, too.
Yeah, please.
It's almost like when you're looking at the history of African Americans in this country, it's almost like a woman has been raped, okay? Mm-hmm. So if a woman is raped or sexually abused, you can't tell her to get over it and move on without first giving her counseling, resources that help her get over that. And a lot of times it's long term. I know people personally that have went through something like that.
Me too, yeah.
But you definitely can't ask them to jump into another relationship prior to that.
Yeah.
So I think in a sense, and I hate using something so terrible as a metaphor, but I often feel like African Americans through slavery, Jim Crow, we were abused. It was like we were raped. And when people say stuff like, yeah, but the president's black, are you not slaves anymore? Like, I couldn't imagine telling a raped woman, like,
you're not getting raped right now.
Yeah, like, what are you complaining about? He's a good guy. Like, and I think what we're trying to do, even in Texas and Tennessee, they're trying to take slavery out of the textbooks. instead of healing. I think we've always been told, hey, it's not that bad anymore. Don't be mad at me. I didn't do it. My grandparents. Yeah, so I felt like we never really, we were shoved in ghettos. And, you know, so I never really think that African Americans really got a chance to heal or have an open dialogue about it. And that's how you heal. When you go to a psychiatrist, it's an open dialogue between you and them. You get to open up and express yourself, which is how hip hop was birthed. Because for that was really one of our first chances, that and the Harlem Renaissance, where we really got to come out and say, okay, this is how we feel. This is what we're going through in our neighborhoods. This is what we see every day. And I think you're just getting a backlog of that. I think a lot of people see a black president and they see Jay-Z and Beyonce and they say, what are you upset about? And, you know, that's a whole other conversation.
Sure.
But, you know, I think that that's the, it's a disconnect because I feel like a lot of racism isn't even based off hatred. More than ignorance.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And just trying to... that's why a lot of things I don't agree with Obama, but I like the nuance that he takes with the racial conversation because I think he understands that. Yeah. A lot of us wanting to be super militant, be on his Malcolm X, you know what I'm saying? But I think the nuanced approach that he's taking, he understands that, hey, it's not a lot of people that necessarily hate African Americans, they might be ignorant, and ignorance breeds fear.
They just don't know anything.
Yeah, but
yeah, I've run into that a lot. There was a newspaper article a while back that indicated that things like racism, sexism, and homophobia was related to intelligence. And I thought, well, that's interesting. That tells me exactly what I want to hear. Let me read the article because I'm suspicious of that. It was actually just proximity. To people, is the a lot of the people who are against gay marriage don't know any gay couples. They're not going to dinner parties over at their places and stuff like that. A lot of people who are racist honestly don't know, aren't friends with people who aren't the same race as they are.
Right.
And yeah, it's an empathy, a lack of empathy.
Yeah.
Let me think about somebody that's not me for a second and how they feel is something we're lacking. Maybe we always lacked it.
Yeah.
Maybe there have been times where we've had more or less of it.
Yeah.
Right now we got less of it.
Yeah.
And let me think about somebody who's not me for a second and their perspective.
Yeah. Just to bring it back to sports before we move
Absolutely.
On. To full circle it. You were talking about sort of first wave African American civil rights in the 60s and 70s. Alongside hip-hop at the same time was these demonstrations by black athletes, right? They were sprinters, I think.
The 68 Olympics?
Right.
Yeah,
their
names escape me at the moment.
Putting up the black power fist,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And no one was especially happy about that at the time either, right?
Right.
But these things snowball. And now, you know, just last night, Brandon Marshall, who went to Nevada with Colin Kaepernick, also took a knee during the national anthem.
I saw that.
There was a female soccer player also did the same thing, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And the timeline I'm not exactly clear on, but, you know, then we've got Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, a lot of these prominent black athletes sort of formed a coalition saying, hey, we're all together and we're all saying that there needs to be some kind of a change. So this, to me, sort of seems to mirror that. And if you're coming out trying to change the conversation to, well, you're anti-American, well, you know what? Just keep wearing your Make America Great Again hat I can identify you.
And you know, real quick, before we move from that, what I find ironic is just a couple months ago, when he passed away, the same people that were praising Ali for his stances and being an athlete that speaks out, now they're throwing Colin Kaepernick under the bus.
It's a lot of
the same black athletes, too. Your Jerry Rices and a lot of these guys that were praising Muhammad Ali for what he did in and out of the ring are now throwing him under the bus.
At the time, we're probably calling him a draft dodger.
Yeah.
But you get a lot of respect and a lot of dignity for sticking around and just growing old and sticking to your guns and doing all
that.
I was thinking about that.
And losing your ability to speak. I mean, Jim Brown is still a divisive figure because he still goes out and he still stands with guys like Ray Rice or something like, or, you know, these guys who are trying to, maybe not the greatest example, but...
I get your point, though.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But just to get to my quote, and I've always loved this, I wish I could attribute it to somebody, but Muhammad Ali wasn't beloved until he lost his ability to speak. And some instances, I think that's speaking. All right. Yeah. So we're in studio with Divine Karama, hip-hop artist, director of Believing in Forever, and youth services coordinator at the Community Action Council.
Peace.
I want to bring the conversation back to Lexington now because you're involved in some really cool community events in your capacity as a speaker and the director of Believing in Forever, a youth-oriented arts education and community service organization. Could you first tell us about the Extra Credit program beginning tomorrow and what all is involved in that?
Yes, so Extra Credit is a youth tutoring session. So it's going to be free, and it'll be open to all ages in Lexington, Kentucky. So we're going to feed them breakfast. We'll have a free book exchange where kids can come drop off old books, pick up some new ones, just trade in and out. And we're going to have a bunch of ex-teachers and volunteers that will be there to help them with projects, homework, studying, whatever they're dealing with, we want to help them. And we've been focusing primarily on the cool living area, which is the low-income housing right beside the Plannery, which is hooked to West 6th. So a lot of people know West 6th Brewery over there. So we've been focusing there just because they don't need transportation. The kids can just walk right over. But it's open to the entire Lexington area. And my goal is to build this so big that we got to find another place to do it. because going to schools... through my job, Community Action Council, doing the work through Believing If Ever, kids are struggling. Mm-hmm. And I think that the schools are getting so big. We just opened up another elementary school, got a new high school coming, which my daughter will be going to next year. So these schools are overpacked. They're funneling this information to these kids so quick. A lot of them aren't getting the information. Sometimes their living conditions aren't the best. They don't have money for extra educational services. Mm-hmm. So we just want to kind of be a beacon of light for that, for a lot of these kids. We just want to try to help out where and however we can. So my goal is to have more volunteers than kids. I don't care if we have 30 volunteers and 5 kids. I'm cool with that ratio. What I don't want is the kids outnumbering us. And it's from 10 to noon. I mean, volunteers can come for 30 minutes. Come for 30 minutes, help some kids with some homework, and go get ready to tailgate or, you know, whatever else you got to do. You know what I mean? So I'm really excited about this. This is something that I've been wanting to do for a while, and I just found the time to really do it and lock in on it. So we get started this Saturday, every Saturday morning, by the way.
And if people want more information, where can they go for
They can believinginforever.com or just email me at believinginforever@gmail.com. Easy.
Okay. I should also say follow Divine on Facebook. I think that seems to be the quickest way. Like, that's sort of your...
Get it out. Because I think I have... the 5,000 friends, but then we several more thousand follow the page. So usually I can post something and it gets out there a little quicker. So
now it's free breakfast for all students, what, K through 12?
Yep.
Okay. Fantastic. Of course, any nonprofit endeavor requires a lot of support to keep functioning. What can you tell us about the community weekend at Barnes & Noble Hamburg next weekend?
Yes, so next weekend I am partnering with a Lexington author by the name of Ashawn Mosby. And she just dropped a new book called, I believe it's called, I want to get the title right, Through Her Eyes.
Okay.
And it's unique because her dad was a sniper in the military, and her mom is a preacher. So she kind of tells her story through that dynamic. Like, my dad's a sniper, mom's a preacher. So really, really dope. So she'll be doing a book signing that weekend.
Great.
But she's partnering with me, and we're just going to take over the store. So we're going to do face painting, little poetry workshops, book signings, story time, and 10% of all proceeds that weekend from the entire store, including the little Starbucks or coffee shop they got inside, will go to Believing in Forever, Inc. Right.
10%, so, man.
10%, man. That's a blessing, man. For somebody that's and we just got our 501(c) this year.
Okay.
So for somebody that's already been doing a lot of work in the community, but it's been coming out of pocket, like I was like, okay, yeah, this is cool. So that'll be a blessing, and that's just in time for the coat drive coming up in the fall and the winter. Our annual coat drive, and we always do brand new coats. Okay. So that'll be the perfect setup for that. So it's a blessing. So come out, buy a book, a bookmark. Some coffee, cappuccino, something. September 16th through the 18th. So,
Barnes & Noble in Hamburg. Where can people find the schedule of events for that? Is that going to be at believinginforever.com also?
That will be today. In the meantime, go to Facebook and just search Believing in Forever, Inc. and like our Facebook page. And the flyer is on our Facebook page right now.
Divine Karama in studio with us. I swear we're going to get to the music right now. Hip-hop artist. You can find all of his music at divinekarama.bandcamp.com.
Yes, sir.
All right, so let's talk about lyrics and the lyric here. Since we had you on in July, and you were telling us this right before we came on air, like since the end of July, you've come up with an entire new, from pen to recording studio, an entire new full-length album. Can you tell us about that?
So I have a new album called King Tucky that is dropping on my birthday, October 27th. Okay. And this is an album that people have been wanting from me probably for a decade. When I got my start in hip-hop, my reputation was made battling in the streets, street corner with the boombox, freestyling over instrumentals at parties, just, I mean, lyrics. That's how I built my reputation. But I think shortly after I started music, I really got into the spiritual and the community service component of music. So I became more socially conscious in my music. And I think it's kind of, you have to acquiesce towards that a little bit from being that super lyrical miracle cannabis, you know, Eminem type lyricist. You know, it's because I think naturally as an artist, your heart is tempered towards, okay, how can I make a song that inspires somebody? How can I make a song that leads somebody closer to spiritual elevation? So you kind of lose that edge a little bit. And of course, I still get it in with the pen and pad. Don't get it twisted. But I think a lot of people that's known me from day one, specifically Shiesty Christ, Hendrick Floyd, he's like, yo, we need that old DC back. And my heart just hasn't been there. So all of a sudden, this producer from Philly who made his way to Lexington a couple years ago by the name of Obvious, who's produced several projects, building his reputation up, very dope, sent me a beat. I'm going to tell you how it started. Shortly after our interview, sends me a beat, real boom bap, DJ scratching, soulful, those heavy drums, and it was called Rather Unique. And it had that sample in it, Rather Unique. And when he sent me that, I literally said, "Aight, it's time."
Right there.
What else you got? I wrote, like, within 5 minutes, two verses done. All right, what else you got? Then he sent me another beat. And the funny thing about producers is they name their beats the silliest thing, because it's whatever they're thinking at the time. So this beat was called Millie Jack. Like, I have no idea why, right? So he sent it to me, and I actually named that track We Move. Okay. Because that was everything going on with the march. So 10 minutes, that was wrote. What else you got? And he said, hold up, man. Let me get to work. I'm going to send you 10 beats this weekend. Within the next week, he sent 10 beats. Within 2.5 weeks, I had 10 more songs wrote.
Is it kind of like a slow building, like steam sort of thing, where it's like now it's been building up, and now it all needs to get released at the same time? Is that how it feels?
I tell you what it is, because I've been doing it so long. Mm-hmm. So it used to be, I wrote every day, even with no music, just to write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was my diary. Then when I would get beats, I got pads of rhymes, and I would see what matched up. Mm-hmm. But when you're 15 projects and 10 years deep, I only write when it's time to write. But I think what has to happen is, it's almost like when you're running, and you know how you, when say you're in a race, haven't really stretched, you got to dig first for like that first 30 yards, and then once you get loose, you're going, now you can start flowing, stretching out a little more. I think that's what happened.
You get your second wind?
I think I forced myself to go back 10 years ago and say, no, you're going to write today. And what it did is it got me in a rhythm to where things were coming to me, and it's just like Kanye West had a rhyme. He said, I forgot better stuff than you ever thought of. And I understand that, because I've literally, like, would be driving like, oh, that's dope, and I have nothing to type. My phone's dead. I have nothing to write with. And then it's like I get home and I'm like, oh, like, that was the dopest thing ever, and it's gone.
I've forgotten a note between the couch between the couch and the desk. Like those two steps. What was I gonna write down?
Right.
Yeah.
Gone. I'm curious about, do you when you match up lyrics or subject matter to a beat, is that a calculative process on your part, or is that intuitive more?
I think it's just whatever makes sense. Because, and you know, I'm a spiritual dude, so I feel like God's going to orchestrate it to make it work. So I literally think as I was writing, he was sending me beats, and I'm like, how did he know? Like, you know what I'm saying? This is perfect. But I think, too, I was writing a lot to beats, which I didn't do a lot in the past. But he was sending me stuff that was invoking a direction or a mood. So We Move, I felt like this is a beat that I would listen to if I was marching.
So it was more using the beats as a foundation rather than,
going from there.
Rather than you have different components and try to combine
at
them.
At this point.
You're building on top of instead of conjoining.
At this point, yes. Cool. And I think that's how you make better music. Because when you're forcing rhymes to go with beats you've never heard before, even if you can make it work, it's still a force. But if you're writing to the beat, you're literally writing to the melody. So sonically, it's going to sound better. And I think that's what was dope with this project. And I will say this, lyrically, is probably my best project ever.
That's great.
It's just no rhyme or reason. I'm not trying to save people's lives. We this ain't no bullet. I'm trying to, I want upcoming rappers to listen to this album, and rappers that's been doing it a long time, and I want them to second guess if rapping is really what they want to do. That's my goal with this album. It's about skill. Because it's an art form. We live in an era where it's went away from being an art form, and it's just the hustle. And we got rappers now to say, I don't even want to be a rap. Don't even call me a rap. Like, what? You know what I mean? So I want to get it back to where it's a... And I'm actually doing a lyric symposium at the Carnegie Center in November. Because I want Lexington and Kentucky to start... I want them to start respecting hip-hop as a form of writing. Mm. When you give awards for art and writing, hip-hop should be considered.
Absolutely.
So we're going to do a lyric symposium, break down lyrics. I'm talking about from the rhyme scheme, the structure, motivation behind everything. We're going to break it down.
It's not that different from Willie Shakes when you think about it.
Come on. So, I mean, if you don't like to think, if you want to get things first, listen, don't buy this album. It's not for you. This is for people who like to think. It's for people who like poetry,
and lyrics. And you like the craft of it. I love it.
I love putting words together, how you can fit them, how you can play with the rhyme schemes. And it's just, I just love the art of writing. And I think this album giving me opportunity. 23 tracks.
You think maybe young people a little more commercial? They're thinking more about what's going to sell or what's going to be popular, and not being true to themselves a little bit?
Without question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we talk about that a little bit on the album, too. A little bit.
So I'll wait and see a little bit.
Yeah, just a little. We touch on it. Yeah.
I ask the question, the album will answer it.
Yeah, these dudes rapping all aggressive in verses. Don't let me find out you passive aggressive in person. Like, you know, just we get into that on the album. So
King Tucky, Divine's latest full-length album to be released October 27th, and it'll be available at divinekarama.bandcamp.com. We are actually going to listen as we go out to God Said I'm the Nicest. It's the interlude that's on.
Nobody call Kyle. right now.
No, please don't. I know that that you need to go see check out that Tom Hanks movie here pretty soon. But
yes, sir.
But big before movie, you get bro. Out of here, man, the Talib Kweli live at the Lyric next week, Thursday. Yes, how sir. Hyped are you for this show?
I'm super excited, man, because this is, he's a legend in the game. This is somebody I looked up to, because when I was living on 227 Whispering Hill Drive, you know what I'm saying, living in that little, you know, two-room duplex, mm-hmm. when we were listening to hip-hop, there really wasn't a voice at that time for me, right? And what I mean by that is there were people making records for the block, for the gangsters, for the players, for the playboys. And remember, you know, Public Enemy kind of came before my time, really. Mm. So when Raucous Records and Common and Kweli and the Roots and Lauryn Hill and the Fugees came, I felt like, yo, I can be from this neighborhood. I can be black, but I can also be socially conscious. I can be a part of hip-hop culture, but I can think with the culture too. So like, this is one of the pioneers. I wouldn't exist if it wasn't for dudes like this. So to know that I have his respect and get an opportunity to share the stage, man, it's humbling, man. I just hope my nerves don't get too out of it's, you know, it takes your breath away, man. Yeah, so yeah. You know, I'm working on my set now.
Well, it's a lot like writing. You know, you always get nervous right before, you know, stage time, performance time is coming up.
Yeah,
you force yourself out there and everything's fine.
Everything's good. Yeah, I'll be good when I get out there. But yeah, I'm just looking forward to it, man. That's something off the bucket list.
Have you met him before?
He kind of remembers, but I don't think he does. I performed at Public Assembly in Brooklyn, and he actually gave me props after my set. Okay. So I don't know if he remembers that. I'm going to ask him.
You going to ask him?
When I'm hanging around my homies, I'm like, yeah, you know, Kweli gave me props. You know what I'm saying? You know, I use it. I remember it.
You might not want to ask.
Yeah, yeah. He might be like, no, not really. But from what I heard, he actually cherry-picked me for one of the opening acts.
Oh, nice.
So I know he's familiar with the music. So that was humbling. So, yeah.
Last question.
Yes, sir.
Is it sold out?
Not yet, but it's close.
Okay.
I think entire middle section of the theater, which takes up 60% of the theater, is sold out. So I think the only seats left is, I think it's halfway down on the side aisles.
Okay.
So I think we're close, man. I think we're about 70, 75%. And you know people do last minute in Lexington, so.
And you've been warned.
You'll play to them. You won't forget the people on the side.
Oh, of course not. Okay, come on.
Good.
Come on now. I'm going to move around that stage. So.
Oh, there you
go.
Thanks again for coming in, man.
No problem. Appreciate you,
welcome,
man.
Anytime.
I appreciate you, brother.
All right, so we're going to go out with God Said I'm the Nicest, the interlude off of Kentucky. We'll be right back with our next guests. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community.
Peace.